report from the SSC. We'll be reviewing the recommendations concerning herring, monkfish, and groundfish ABC. Tab 12 is the SSC section of your binder. I'm not sure if, did we also hand out additional paperwork to council members, Pat?
Yeah.
Under tab 12, you have documents 12, 13, and 14. Those are the three reports on groundfish, monkfish, and herring. So the full reports are there to look at while we're speaking.
Okay. And just remind everybody to put their phones on silence. And as a reminder, we try to take a break every hour and a half or so. So prior to picking up herring after SSC, we'll take a quick break. I'll turn it over to Dr. Cajun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to recognize our SSC members in the audience, John Anila, Jay Kreitzer. As the chair said, we had three major issues that we dealt with at our April-May meeting, Groundfish Amendment 16, rebuilding strategies and catch recommendations, monkfish catch recommendations, and herring approach to catch recommendations. We also discussed the upcoming ecosystem-based fishery management workshop and some administrative matters. Among those was the need for the SSC to attend all council meetings. There are several expanding roles of the SSC. Our presence is being requested at peer reviews, working groups throughout the region, as well as the council. We will do our best using the entire SSC to meet that need. I'll be here all week, and we will try to have an SSC member here for all council discussions. Moving into groundfish, we had two terms of reference. The first was to review the rebuilding strategies for the newly overfished stocks, which flounder, Georges Bank winter flounder, pollock, wolffish, and northern windowpane. There's an alternative rebuilding plan for each of these stocks in the Amendment 16 proposal. And the council asked the SSC to comment on those rebuilding plans, especially for the stocks that don't have reliable projections. The second term of reference was to further develop guidance on groundfish acceptable biological catch, review the PDT's recommendations and suggest modifications or additional work needed to set ABCs later this year. On the first term of reference, the rebuilding strategies, we started out with the last groundfish assessment review meeting from last summer. The SSC endorsed the methodology, including the assessment methods, the projection methods, and the conclusions of the peer review panel. That gave us a basis of decisions on how to use projections, how to use stock status, and move forward from that. The SSC also supported the recommendation of the plan development team to develop, to rebuild the newly overfished stocks by 2017. So that's for which Georges Bank winter flounder, pollock, wolffish, and northern windowpane, and that was based on the maximum net present value. So moving on to the second term of reference, which is developing acceptable biological catch specification methods for groundfish. And to do that, I'd like to take a bit of a step back and perhaps touch on some of the issues the council discussed yesterday in terms of meeting these new requirements. So we'll start out with the Act for National Standard 1 to prevent overfishing and achieve optimum yield on a continuing basis. Now, that's been in the Act since 1976. The definition of optimum yield was revised in 1996 so that optimum yield is maximum sustainable yield as reduced by economic, social, or ecological factors. And in the case of overfished fishery, optimum yield is the level that allows rebuilding. So hopefully council members are familiar with those. The newly reauthorized Act adds to that in that management plans need to have annual catch limits such that overfishing does not occur in the fishery, including measures to ensure accountability. So our catch limits now need to ensure that overfishing does not occur, and if it does, there need to be accountability measures. The SSC has a role in this, is that we provide the recommendations on acceptable biological catch, and this council is bounded by that recommendation such that the ACL needs to be less than the SSC's recommendation for acceptable biological catch. And according to National Standard 1 guidelines, these acceptable biological catches, whenever possible, should be based on the probability of overfishing. So any ABC recommendation that we have ideally should be based on a low probability that that catch produces an overfishing situation. So the council chair challenged me to describe this without any scientific gobbledygook, I think was the term that he used. And I think that's a tall task, and I'm not sure if I can meet it, but I think we do need to go over some of the acronyms at least. And the first two you've seen before, and those are MSY and OY, so maximum sustainable yield and optimum yield. But I did want to put the calculation of those, that MSY is simply FMSY times BMSY, so the fishing mortality that produces maximum yield times the biomass that produces maximum yield. Optimum yield, as I quoted from the Act, is MSY minus any social, economic, or ecological factors. So OY is less than MSY. We're now introducing four new acronyms. OFL is the overfishing level of catch, the catch associated with overfishing. And this is also based on FMSY, as MSY is, but the biomass that it's applied to is not BMSY. It's the biomass that's available in the year that we're dealing with. So if we're setting ABC for 2011, it's the projected biomass for 2011. So if you compare the MSY calculation with the OFL calculation, you'll see that OFL will be less than MSY if the stock size is lower than BMSY, and OFL will actually be higher than MSY if the biomass is greater than BMSY. Most of our focus will be on acceptable biological catch because that's the role of the SSC, is to provide a recommendation on that. And ABC is the overfishing level reduced to account for scientific uncertainty. And so I'm simply putting a notation of ABC equals OFL minus something. And that something is a buffer that should account for this scientific uncertainty. Now, there was some discussion yesterday about scientific uncertainty and management uncertainty. You all know well that fishery science is not an exact science. We don't estimate stock size or fishing mortality exactly correctly. And so scientific uncertainty is how close is the stock assessment? How close to the truth have we gotten? And the truth may be hard to find, but we have hindsight to judge that. In hindsight, we usually know how far off we were with our stock assessment. And so again, scientific uncertainty is how close was the assessment. The next is annual catch limit. And that is bounded by the SSC's recommendation on acceptable biological catch. It can be divided into sectors. It can be lower than the ABC because there are some portions of the catch that are outside jurisdiction, Canadian catch, state waters catch, so that ABC may be less, ACL may be less than ABC. And I should say that the sum of all of the sector ACLs should be less than the ABC. Then finally, for some plans, there's an annual catch target. This is completely optional, as we discussed yesterday. And this is reduced from the ACL to account for management uncertainty. And so it's just ACT equals ACL minus something. And this is a different something. And we talked about double counting yesterday. Whereas scientific uncertainty is how close the stock assessment is to the truth, management uncertainty is how effectively can the management system control catch. Those are two very different things. But as was discussed yesterday, it can be difficult to partition those, because there are some things that affect both. Perhaps the best example would be inadequate observer coverage. If we don't have enough observer coverage, our stock assessment will suffer because we won't know exactly what the discards were and what their age composition was. And so that's going to add to the scientific uncertainty. The stock assessment is not going to be as close to the truth because of poor observer coverage. Observer coverage is also going to affect the management system's ability to monitor the catch. And so if there isn't enough observer coverage and you don't know what the discards are in the year being managed, observer coverage will also affect your management uncertainty. So where it may sound like observer uncertainty is going into both, that's double counting, we just need to recognize that things like the observer system meet two goals. The center uses it for the stock assessments, and the regional office uses it for the catch monitoring. And because it feeds into both of those, it should be considered in both of those buffers. So again, we'll probably need to come back to this, but these are the new acronyms that we'll be dealing with. Some of them may sound a bit academic, but they're going to get very practical very soon. Just looking at this in a bit of a schematic, our catch limits increase as a function of exploitable biomass. And so this is the projected biomass that's available to the fishery, so the exploitable stock biomass and the catch. So we have our catch associated with overfishing. This is simply FMSY applied to the biomass that's available. We have a buffer below that to account for scientific uncertainty to derive our acceptable biological catch. Our annual catch target should be less than or equal to that acceptable biological catch. And for some plans, we have an annual catch target to account for management uncertainty. So with that introduction, we'll get into groundfish. Just a little less than a year ago, the PDT presented a general approach for groundfish acceptable biological catch specification to the SSC. And they were working off the draft guidelines in which the ABC should be derived as a function of scientific uncertainty in the projected catch at FREBUILD or FMSY. So that in the past we have projected catch at FREBUILD or FMSY and had a soft TAC based on that deterministic projection, but now what we need to do is to describe a distribution of catch. We need to recognize that our science is not exact, that anytime we're projecting catch, we do so within confidence bounds. And so the bell curve I have drawn there is just a simple schematic that represents a distribution of catch. If we assume we're fishing at FMSY, here's our best scientific estimate of catch and its uncertainty. So what the groundfish PDT proposes is that we choose a percentile of the lower tail. So we take the ascending limb of that bell curve and we pick a percentile of catch, and that should be what our ABC is. Our OFL would be the catch right in the middle of that curve. And so the ABC would be a lower percentile of that distribution. So how much of a lower percentile should it be? And here's where the PDT picked up on some national workshops on setting annual catch limits that would be based on productivity and vulnerability. So the productivity is based on the stock size, how close is your SSB to that produces MSY, how strong is your recruitment, how well are the fish growing, what's the age structure of the population, how are they distributed geographically, and how susceptible are they to the gear. So here's just a score of productivity. And the other factor is uncertainty. So what type of assessment is it? Is it simply an index assessment, or is it a fully age-based assessment? How has it performed in the past? Has it been reasonable? Has it had performance problems in the past? Does it have a retrospective pattern? And then how far out in the projection are we? Near-term projections are more precise than long-term projections. So how much of the catch is just projected catch? So when you combine the productivity and uncertainty scores, you can derive a different percentile of the catch. So in a case where you have moderate uncertainty and low productivity, you would choose a low percentile like the 10th percentile of that curve. So the SSC thought this was a reasonable approach. It conformed to the guidelines. It conformed to national development in annual catch limits. One thing we had asked was to evaluate the performance of this going back to the second GARM, the 2005 stock assessments, and move forward as if this were our acceptable biological catch rule and see how it performed. So what I have plotted here is a graph from the PDT analysis. It's the stock size of Gulf of Maine cod. The framework 42 projection is in pink. The GARM 3 catch, so in hindsight, this is the actual catch that we took. And the 10th percentile is the star, the purple star. You can see that these are all fairly consistent with each other. Is that our ABC advice would not have been very different than our Framework 42 advice. However, as we all know, with those observed catches, our fishing mortalities produced by those catches exceeded FMSY. And so in hindsight, this percentile method would not have worked to end overfishing, which is unfortunate. This has been developed and tried for three of our age-based stock assessments, and Gulf of Maine cod may be one of our best assessments, and it did not perform well. So it's an unfortunate result, but it really reflects the fact that the 2005 assessments now appear to have been optimistic. And it really highlights a few aspects of our stock assessments that our medium and long-term projections, so beyond 2 or 3 years, are highly uncertain. Estimating the probabilities of the tails of a distribution is particularly difficult. It's a challenge to the science not only to estimate the stock size and the fishing mortality, but now to estimate the variance in those. We're not doing well in estimating those variances. And if the projections are unbiased and the probabilities are, even if they're accurately estimated, our stocks will be behind in our rebuilding by the end of the rebuild period because they won't have performed well for ending overfishing. And for many of our groundfish stocks, we don't have the data to do probabilistic projections. So what do we do in this situation where our stock assessments are not performing to the point where we can use the national guidelines approach to ABCs? We cannot use the national guidance that we have on deriving acceptable biological catch based on probability. Well, there is some clear guidance in the guidelines, in that if we're in a rebuilding plan, that our ABC should be based on the fishing mortality that allows rebuilding. So for many of our groundfish stocks, we know what our ABC should be. There's also very clear guidance on the situation where you reach the end of your rebuilding period, T-max, and the stock has not rebuilt yet. We should expect that several of our groundfish stocks will be in this situation at the end of their rebuilding period because they're behind schedule in rebuilding. In that case, the guidelines are clear that the ABC should be based on F rebuild or 75% of FMSY. That's the maximum fishing mortality threshold, whichever is less. So these are the ABCs that we are bound to if we're going to conform to the guidelines. What the SSC is proposing is that in the absence of any better information on what the appropriate buffer should be, that this 75% of FMSY or F rebuild should be the basis for ABC at all stock sizes. So for all stock sizes, we would have an ABC based on 75% of FMSY. If that 75% of FMSY does not allow for rebuilding within a desired period, then we would have to derive an F rebuild. 75% of FMSY Its basis is in the guidelines. It is arbitrary, but it had the performance of 75% FMSY has been demonstrated for many stocks worldwide, including some of the New England groundfish, although those evaluations are a bit dated. The groundfish team has started to perform some of these evaluations, and what most of these evaluations show is that by fishing at 75% of FMSY, there is not much foregone yield. The catch associated with 75% FMSY is not much less than that associated with FMSY. It's more than 75% of it, because 75% of FMSY maintains a higher stock size. However, as we move forward with this, we feel that we should develop more detailed evaluations of this rule for all of our groundfish stocks. We recognize that the analyses that went into the Amendment 16 proposals were not based on this 75% of FMSY ABC method. They were based on the 50th percentile of projected catch at F rebuild or FMSY. So there may be some procedural difficulties in going forward with this. However, the SSC recommends that it should be implemented as soon as possible. Now, there are still some stocks that fall through the cracks because they don't have accepted projection methods. For example, Wolffish, Northern Windowpane. For those, the SSC recommends that ABC should be based on 75% of FMSY, or its proxy, and the most recent estimate of exploitable biomass. So rather than using projected biomass, we use our most recent estimate of biomass. And for data poor stocks, those that we don't have on stock status known, we will need to develop ad hoc ABC recommendations on a case-by-case basis. At the present, we have Gulf of Maine winter flounder, which no longer has an accepted stock assessment method. For that, we based our recommendation on the conclusions of the peer review panel, in which they were concerned that the current trend was negative, and it was likely the biomass was below BMSY and probably below half BMSY. So based on that, the SSC recommended a reduction in catch of Gulf of Maine winter flounder, and the ABC, the interim ABC, should be based on 75% of the status quo catch, that is the catch from 2005 to 2007. So this is a summary of the groundfish recommendations, that the rebuilding plans for the newly overfished stocks should be by 2017, that for all groundfish stocks, acceptable biological catch should be based on 75% of FMSY or F rebuild if 75% of FMSY does not allow rebuilding. For stocks that can't rebuild to BMSY, even with no fishing, the ABC should be based on incidental bycatch, including a reduction in the bycatch rate. This would now apply to southern New England winter flounder. And as I said, for Gulf of Maine winter flounder, interim ABCs for uncertain situations should be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. That's all I had on groundfish, Mr. Chairman. Do you want comments now?
Yeah, I think we'll stop, Steve, and see if there's any questions from the council. Nancy.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve. That was, I think it was really well done. And I also appreciate that you're talking in terms of scientific uncertainty as a reality. Obviously, unless we move into census programs, and as long as we continue doing sampling, there will always be scientific uncertainty. So there's really no reason to get kind of hung up on that, because it's just a reality, and it's built into that distribution of ABCs. And so if I follow you correctly, when we look at that distribution of ABCs, then the decision is really, or the advice from the SSC, is relative to an ACL within that distribution. And the important decision then for the council is how much risk it's willing to take relative to, say, a rebuilding program or getting into a situation where there's overfishing where previously there wasn't. So given that, then, you indicated that in an ideal world, again, the science advice will be couched as a risk assessment. And then you said, and this is what I was confused by, that we don't have sufficient information, essentially, to do that. And I guess that is where my question is, because I think for a lot of stocks, we do have that information.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy. That's an excellent question and something that we should keep in mind, is that this is being proposed as an ABC method for groundfish because some of our best groundfish assessments were not able to support this estimation of uncertainty. It should not be considered as SSC recommendations outside of groundfish. There are assessments that we can do the default method very well. We've started working on those with scallops and other assessments in which we can estimate the distribution well. So this is a recommendation for groundfish only, and we should make that clear. And if our groundfish assessments get to the point where we can resolve some of these retrospective patterns, then we should move back towards a probabilistic approach to ABCs for groundfish.
Steve, the setting ABC at 75% of MSY, should the council consider that a control rule?
Yeah, Paul, I think that you could easily view it that way based on a plot like this in which if we take 75% of FMSY, that would apply to all stock sizes with the exception of very low stock sizes that cannot rebuild to BMSY in the desired period, 10 years or less. And so that's why this control rule that I have sketched up here has dashed lines down near the origin. So it's a nearly complete control rule. If we are in an overfished situation, we probably want to come up with an ad hoc rebuilding plan based on the age structure, based on the fishing mortality rates, the selectivity, to optimize what the rebuilding plan should be. So I think you can view it as a control rule with the exception of those overfished stocks.
Dr. Pierce.
Yes, Steve, thanks a lot for your presentation. You mentioned that the ABC, as we all know, is equal to the OFL, reduced by some amount that accounts for scientific uncertainty. Is the SSC in a position to evaluate the extent to which scientific uncertainty has already been incorporated into the stock assessments themselves, specifically if an assessment or assessments are done with very conservative assumptions regarding the elements of the assessment itself? It seems to me that already accounts for scientific uncertainty through conservative assumptions. So an assessment is then produced. We have those results with scientific uncertainty already accounted for. Do we have to have another level of scientific uncertainty piled on top of that that would therefore reduce the numbers? That's the question. Can you determine the amount of scientific uncertainty that has already been accounted for in any given assessment and then, you know, go from there?
Yeah, thanks, David. Another good point, and it comes to where is the uncertainty and is the uncertainty being double counted? There was discussion at the GARM about things like retrospective adjustments and split factors. And there was a plea from SSC members that whatever come out of the GARM be risk neutral, that it not have any hedge for uncertainty, that the peer review panel put forth their best scientific estimate of stock status and projection methods, and that scientific uncertainty would be incorporated in the ABC, as you said. And so the peer review panel's determination was things like retrospective adjustments for some stocks, split factors for other stocks, was the best science available for risk-neutral stock status. And so the peer review panel did not feel that they were incorporating scientific uncertainty. They were simply fixing a scientific problem in there. That was the conclusion from the GARM. And that's why at the first stage of the SSC's groundfish deliberations, we went back to some of those decisions. And it was not simply a rubber stamp. And we decided as an SSC to pick up where the GARM left off, that we endorsed the decisions from the peer review panel as the risk-neutral science. And it was our job then to build the scientific uncertainty on top of it. So, but it's a good point, and I think what we need to do, and we're in the process of doing, is being more clear to our peer review panels of what their tasks are with respect to OFL and ABC. And Fred Sirchuk has been working with Jim Weinberg and others to recraft our generic terms of reference for stock assessments. So that's made more clear, so that if a peer review panel wants to consider scientific uncertainty, we want to hear about it, but we want to hear about it separately than the stock status determination and the stock assessment. That there is a role for scientific uncertainty, and it is not in the status determination.
All right, excellent, Steve. I had hoped that was the outcome. I'm glad you and the SSC are on top of this because it is a critical issue. So I guess we can conclude then that when the SSC provides advice later on this year regarding the ABC, that you're confident that the information that you will be using, the information that came out of the GARM, those assessments, already are risk neutral. So we don't have to get into this discussion a few months from now. It is risk neutral. That assessment has already been done by the SSC. I believe that's what you're telling me. Okay, good. And I have another question. And that would be in your SSC recommendation relative to for stocks that cannot rebuild to BMSY in the specified rebuilding period, even with no fishing, the ABC should be based on incidental bycatch, including a reduction in the bycatch rate. What exactly is meant by that, especially as applied to southern New England winter flounder? Does that mean that the ABC would be the anticipated bycatch that would occur in the different fisheries that are operating off of our coast, specifically for groundfish? I'm trying to put this in the context of what currently is in place right now as a regulation affecting winter flounder in those areas. That is, no possession, throw them all back. I think that this particular recommendation that you're making would mean that what's in place now for southern New England winter flounder is inconsistent with an SSC recommendation.
Yeah, David, thanks for pointing that out. I don't see that, and this is recommendation 2C that David's referring to. The decision for a no possession of southern New England winter flounder is consistent with this. The difference is that the SSC's recommendation on ABC is on total catch, landings and discards. It's not the role of the SSC to allocate between those two. If the way to implement this recommendation is a no possession, then that's up to the council to decide. It may be that the council wants to allocate that incidental catch to landings, but again, that's not the role of the SSC. The SSC is advice on total catch. Recognizing that there are other fisheries in the area, we're recommending there should be no targeted catch. And what happens with the incidental catch is more an issue for the council.
Anyone else? Jim?
Thank you. I would just like to make it very clear something that Dave Pierce raised about in his question. He implied that the stock assessments at coming out of the GARM were made with conservative assumptions, and I'd like to point out that that's not the way that they're done. And I think Steve Cadran answered that, but I wanted to be very clear and reinforce that point, that the assessments are meant to be done in a neutral way to come up with the best estimate of the stock status. And the uncertainty around those estimates is an estimate of how uncertain it is on that neutral point estimate. And then if managers choose to be more conservative, then it comes in at that stage. But it's not in the stock assessment stage.
Anyone else? Mark Gibson.
Resist waiting. This, I appreciate what both Steve and Jim have said. I remain concerned about this notion of risk neutrality, because I think there is at least a minority of people in the scientific community, and I'm probably on this council, that believe that the decision to use split survey, catch at age approaches to resolving the retrospective bias is a risk averse decision, because essentially what you're saying is, we caught those fish in the surveys, but they really didn't exist because the catchability greatly went up in the surveys, and we don't think they exist because they don't appear in the catch at age stream, and that's why you have that retrospective divergence of VPA populations versus the survey based one. So I'm just curious as to what discussion the SSC might have had about that, Steve.
Yeah, I guess what we need to clarify is that, as Jim put, a stock assessment decision that has the intention of a conservative result, so lower stock sizes, higher Fs, in making the situation look worse, having those as the intentions would be a conservative assessment, as opposed to a decision to resolve some scientific problems, like a retrospective pattern, like residual patterns. When your model is telling you there's something wrong, it's up to the scientist to try to fix the problem. So there was disagreement about the split factors, about the retrospective adjustments, but the intention was always to fix the problem, not a foregone conclusion of what the results should be. So I would disagree that they were conservative science, because the intention was to fix the problems in the assessment. You're absolutely right that whether you have a split or not does change the results, and it does take a less optimistic approach if you put a split in. But I don't think a less optimistic view was what the motive was. I think fixing the problems was what the motive was. So I don't view them as conservative assessments. I view them as assessments doing the best they could do with a significant problem.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the presentation, Steve. I think you did an excellent job, at least in my perspective, keeping the gobbledygook to a minimum. My question really goes, and I'm not even sure that I can pose the question correctly, but the 75% of FMSY being implemented as soon as practicable. And I wonder how then we translate that into what we're going to do in Amendment 16, whether it's at the implementation of Amendment 16 level and or setting the specifications later in the year. I'm just having a hard time, translating all of that.
Yeah, and I'm not the final authority on how to reconcile our recommendations with what went out to public hearing on Amendment 16. But fortunately, council staff did recognize this inconsistency at the SSC meeting. And when the SSC was given that question of what do we do with this? Do we wait until the next amendment? Do we try to get it in some other way? The SSC decided that we are not the source of procedural expertise for the council. We're the source of scientific expertise for the council. And scientifically, we feel this should be implemented as soon as possible. Now, perhaps others can speak to the policy issues, but there are some provisions in the National Standard 1 guidelines that the SSC can develop ABC recommendations that vary from the ABC control rule in a plan, that the SSC is not constrained by what is in the plan or what's out to public hearing for their recommendations. And so since the council is bounded by the SSC's recommendations, you can also read that to be that this should be as soon as possible, regardless of what went out to public hearing. But again, I'm not an authority on the procedural aspects of this.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. Thank you. I have a couple questions, Steve, and I know you've already answered them, but I'm just going to restate them. I'm trying to educate the public so that people actually understand what's going on here. I mean, I think you've done a very good job of explaining it, but I'm going to bring it down still a level further. Basically, what the SSC has done here is a restatement of the scientific uncertainty that is caused by a host of input issues into the models. And used to get a stock assessment, and it had error bars around it. And nobody ever looked at the error bars. All they looked at was the number. And now what you've done is you've restated things in such a way that people have to look at the error bars. And I wonder if you could just kind of run through that aspect of it just a little bit again so that people really understand why it's a number reduced by a certain amount.
Right. I guess I'd quickly clarify that this change in approach of using the confidence limits, you're right, we have been presenting confidence limits for a while. It's not the New England SSC that's saying we need to pay attention to them. The big we is saying we need to pay attention to them. The Reauthorized Act and the new National Standard Guidelines are mandating that we pay attention to those. And I think Chris Kellogg put it best is that the ABC is this lower confidence limit of the overfishing level of catch. And a way of thinking of that is that ABC has a probability of overfishing, is that the OFL could be as low as ABC. And because fishery science is inexact, we need to embrace that. And we've seen it in the past, is that we've had the council has kept catch below the soft TAC, but fishing mortality still exceeded FMSY for quite a few of our groundfish stocks. And so we need to have a buffer high, but OFL could be as low as this, and that's what we're calling ABC. Now, it may sound a bit arbitrary to be splitting out scientific uncertainty and management uncertainty. But I think we have to get at the incentive there in that the intent is that stakeholders be accountable for exceeding the catch limit. But stakeholders not be accountable if overfishing occurs because of scientific uncertainty. Accountability measures are triggered when the ACL is exceeded. Accountability measures are not triggered when fishing mortality exceeds FMSY if the catch has been controlled. And so I think it's trying to put accountability in the right place. And so I think it's something that we should encourage is partitioning the uncertainty into scientific and management so that the stakeholders are not accountable for scientific problems.
Thank you. This is a very important point, and I really wanted to kind of elucidated as clearly as possible. The second question I have for you is the second most question I get asked after how much are you guys going to let me catch. The second question is always, well, how come you're always reducing it? And then the statement is made, we haven't even caught the target tax in the last however many years. Why are you reducing the catch when we never meet the target tax? And when I try to explain that the F level's been exceeded, that whole discussion is lost on 99% of the public. So if you could possibly try to, in the most layman terms possible, explain why F rate matters more than the target tack.
Okay, I'll try. And I think the last 5 years of groundfish management are a good example, where, with few exceptions, the catches have been less than the target tack. But when we update the assessments, we find that the fishing mortality was still too high. Now, if we were in this system of ACLs and accountability measures for the last 5 years, there would have been no accountability measures. The management system effectively controlled the catch to at or less than what the scientific advice on catch was. The problem was is that, in retrospect, our science was overly optimistic. And when we took those catches, it produced a fishing mortality greater than FMSY. And so they are two different things. One is our perception of the resource in the fishery, and we get that through our stock assessments, and our stock assessments are not always right. And even if you control the catch, if the science is incorrect, you may still be overfishing. And so that's why there's, in a sense, there's no payback accountability, but because rebuilding is behind schedule, we need to reduce things more to meet our rebuilding timeline. So I guess you could say that indirectly the stakeholders are still accountable for imprecise science, but it's not a direct payback type of thing.
Okay. And one last question, because we're going to have to deal with this issue in ground fish, and that is the issue of this, you know, reducing things to this incidental bycatch level and then trying to reduce the bycatch from that. My understanding of a lot of these status determinations is you need a certain number of fish. You need, you know, measurements on a certain number of fish, otoliths from a certain number of fish, whatever. If we don't get that information, will the SSC, if we don't get that information because we don't land anything, you know, we throw it all back, will the SSC be able to still conduct status determinations? Will the PDTs be able to do the work that they have to do to tell us if we are, in fact, rebuilding the stock? Or should we put in some kind of a bycatch allowance for research, whatever you want to call it, something that gets a sufficient number of fish to be measured and weighed and whatnot that we can determine the status determination? I asked Jim this question yesterday, and I know he was going to get back to me, but I'll ask you the same question.
Yeah, it's a challenge, because if the management is effective in avoiding that resource with the other fisheries, then even intense observer coverage won't be sampling a lot of those fish that can't be landed. And so we would be relying on surveys or perhaps some dedicated cooperative research. You know, we've had, in these situations before, we've had industry-based surveys. We had one for yellowtail when there were disincentives for fishing yellowtail. And that's been a benefit to the assessment for southern New England yellowtail. We would have to do something like that to try to get samples. This recommendation is essentially a practical form of zero catch. When you can't meet your rebuilding on time, the fishing mortality that will give you the fastest rebuilding is zero. But we recognize that this is a mixed stock fishery. There are multiple fishery management plans operating in the same area, that we've seen it time and time again, that a zero catch recommendation just doesn't accept the practical challenges. And so this is trying to accept the practicality and get as close to zero as possible. How we get samples, that's a challenge, and that's something we're going to have to meet as a system, is that we'll have to do it through collaborative research surveys. In the past, this has been done through Sentinel Fisheries worldwide, where you have a moratorium that you have some Sentinel Fisheries to get data. And we'll have to deal with this on a piece-by-piece basis.
Thank you.
Okay, now we have two more reports, Steve. I just had one, I guess, question and a comment. Could you restate one of your opening comments had to do with the value of catch monitoring? And there was a question as to whether or not it was being double counted on both sides of the equation. Could you just rephrase or restate that?
Sure. In summary, catch monitoring affects scientific uncertainty and management uncertainty. It affects the scientific uncertainty in our catch sampling, both in the magnitude, especially of the discards, and the samples of age structure. So if we're not monitoring our catch well, it's going to translate into uncertainty in the stock assessments. Now, we also use catch monitoring more and more so as in-season monitoring as we approach an ACL, of how to manage the fishery as we approach an ACL. If we have poor catch monitoring, we're not going to be able to do that. And we may find, after the year is over, when all the data is in, that we actually exceeded our ACL. And so catch monitoring affects both in different ways. And because it affects both, it needs to be accounted, all of its implications need to be accounted for in the whole new system between OFL, ABC, and a target, if there is a target. Did that answer your question, or did that restate it well?
I think what I heard you say is a failure to have a robust enough catch monitoring or observer program in a given FMP has compounding penalties, both in the assessment down the road and in the short term in the ACL requirements, meeting or not exceeding those ACLs. Okay. I think we'll move on to the next report if you're ready.
We had two terms of reference to provide guidance on the calculation of maximum sustainable yield and catch associated with overfishing. Here we're using exploitable biomass, the biomass available to the fishery, and the acceptable biological catch. The second term of reference was to provide guidance on catch targets and using the scale model for the fishing years 2011 to 13. Again, backing up to the most recent assessment, in 2007, the Data Poor Stocks Workshop reviewed monkfish and developed an assessment. They concluded that FMAX would be a useful proxy for FMSY, and the average of the observed series of biomass would be a proxy for BMSY. The Data Poor Workshop did not provide an MSY proxy. The PDT approximated MSY as simply the product of FMAX times the average observed biomass. And so that comes up to 17,000 tons for the northern management unit and 25,000 tons for the southern management unit. Now, these can be used as a proxy until we get more consistent reference points, but we need to recognize that our proxies for FMSY and BMSY were chosen independently. FMAX is based on yield per recruit, and the average biomass is simply a data poor proxy. And what I mean when I say they're not consistent is that we shouldn't expect that the biomass is going to reach some equilibrium at the average observed biomass when we fish at FMAX. They're simply two independent proxies. They're not consistent with each other, and so this MSY approximation is just that. It's a data poor approximation. Even though we have an assessment model now, monkfish is still in a data poor stock. It cannot produce projections or the probabilities that we just talked about for groundfish for determining acceptable biological catch or even the overfishing level of catch. Because of this data poor situation, the SSC previously recommended an interim method based on the average exploitation rate during the recent periods of increase. So you can see for the northern area, we've had a period of increase. We're simply taking the average exploitation rate during that period. In the southern area, there's been a similar period of increase. We're taking the average of those fishing mortalities as our acceptable biological catch method. We're going to apply this average exploitation rate to the most recent estimate of biomass. When the PDT did this, they came up with acceptable biological catch figures of 17,000 tons for the north and 13,000 tons for the south. Fortunately, there is a new stock assessment for monkfish scheduled next year, and the SSC will reconsider the interim ABC for the 2014 fishing year. So as you can see, our ABC method for the north is slightly higher than the maximum catch that we've observed for that area. That's because the stock size is at an all-time high for that area. For the southern management area, our ABC is on the high end of the observed catch. For catch targets, the annual catch limits are proposed to be equal to the acceptable biological catch. As Chris Kellogg presented yesterday, this is one option in the National Standard Guidelines. The catch targets should consider management uncertainty, and that is the uncertainty in monitoring and controlling landings and discards. The desired risk of exceeding the annual catch limit also needs to be considered, as well as the associated accountability measures. The PDT is proposing in-season measures, so those are the proactive accountability measures, and paybacks in subsequent annual catch limits, and so those are the reactive accountability measures. But really, it's up to the council to determine what risk it wants of exceeding the annual catch limits and what the accountability measures should be. The SSC identified in-season estimated of discarded catch is the major source of uncertainty in controlling catch to be less than the ACLs. So these are our monkfish recommendations. We have acceptable biological catch figures for the fishing years 2011 to 2013. Just over 17,000 tons for the north, just over 13,000 tons for the south. And annual catch targets should be based on the performance of the management system decided by the council, the desired risk of exceeding the ACLs, and the accountability measures. And all sources of management uncertainty should be considered in the buffer between annual catch limit and the catch target. That's all I have on monkfish.
Thanks, Steve. On your second recommendation, decided upon by the council, including the desired risk of exceeding the ACL. I've attended all of your meetings, and I think at every meeting, several of the SSC members say, you know, the council really needs to weigh in here and tell us how risky they want to be with their management plans. And it comes up every meeting. I'm just struggling to find the appropriate place, time, and way to deliver that message back to the council and to set up sort of a metric by which we can come back to you and say, we want to be at 75% or 80%. How do we determine or evaluate risk? And is it specific to each plan, or can we create a framework or a metric that we can apply across all of our plans? Because I think the council does need to have that discussion. I just wouldn't know how to structure it.
Yeah, that's a good question. And as you said, it has come up several times, the SSC discussions. And it needs to be viewed holistically, would be our recommendation, is that it, and I think this came up with Whiting yesterday, it would be inappropriate to discuss the appropriate buffer if you don't know what the management system is. For example, in Whiting, if you don't know whether it's limited entry or open access, it's difficult to conceive of what the appropriate risk should be and what the appropriate accountability measures should be. So the management system, the amount of risk, and the consequences or the accountability measures should all be considered together because they all affect each other. If there isn't a very strong consequence, there aren't much accountability measures, the council may be okay with a fairly high risk of exceeding ACL, you know, maybe close to 50%. However, if there are costly accountability measures, the council is going to want to decrease the frequency of triggering an accountability measure. They work in concert with each other, and so they need to be developed in concert with each other. And I think you're right that it should be done on a plan-by-plan basis because each plan has different fisheries, different catch monitoring systems, and different management systems.
Jim Olive.
Okay. Steve, on the second bullet, could you go back to a slide that showed the graph of the past catch? Yeah. On the first one in the northern area, if you look at ABC now, is above the highest level of catch we had. And we've got, I mean, just less boats, and we've got different other restrictions impacting that. So wouldn't you look at that and say the risk of exceeding the ABC is probably very small under today's existing conditions.
Yeah, in fact, when we go back to our March recommendations, that statement is made based on the previous catches, the current fishery, that the risk of exceeding ABC was fairly low.
Anyone else on monkfish? Dr. Pierce.
Yes, Steve, in your first recommendation, the SSC recommendation regarding the acceptable biological catch, there are two numbers, of course, one for the Northern Management Unit and one for the Southern Management Unit. It's unclear to me still the extent to which the SSC was able to account for scientific uncertainty relative to the amount of discards that actually occurred, the amount of catch that is unaccounted for. Could you elaborate a bit to what extent were those numbers adjusted? How does discarding factor into the determination of those two numbers?
Discarding is included in our ABC method in that, and I'm going to go back to the time series of fishing mortality rates. The discarding that produced those fishing mortality rates is incorporated in the average. And so the scale model has landings and discards in it and estimates a fishing mortality from those. And so this fishing mortality that we use to develop the ABCs has an implicit level of discarding in it because it uses the total catch.
Okay.
We did not explicitly account or layer anything on top of our ABC rule for discards. They are accounted for in the fishing mortality rate.
Okay, they've been accounted for in the fishing mortality rate. I guess I still haven't, I'm still not able to grasp how discarding, well, in terms of risk, adding in, I guess I can't frame the question correctly. Well, let's step down to number two. Well, actually, not go up to the paragraph above the SSC recommendations where it says, the SSC identified the in-season estimation of discarded catch to be a major source of uncertainty in controlling catch to be less than the ACLs. Recent discard estimates have been approximately 7% of landings in the north and 22% of landings in the south. So with that statement there, does that mean that in some way the SSC was able to adjust the numbers downward to the 17.485 and the 13.326 to account for those particular levels of discarding?
Here's where we need to be careful between which buffer we're talking about and whether it's the buffer between overfishing level of catch and ABC or the buffer between ABC and your catch targets. We've accounted for discards in the ABC based on our F, our fishing mortality and its selectivity. That paragraph you're referring to is our recommendation for the catch target, is that the catch target should consider that monitoring discards is going to be the principal source of uncertainty in catch monitoring for monkfish. And so considering that, unless there's a large increase in observer coverage in the monkfish fishery, you probably want to have a target below the ACL to avoid exceeding the ACL. Now, it may be that for given the current fleet, even with poor discard monitoring, you don't think you're going to be above the ACL. If that's the case, you can have a target that's close to the ACL. Or you can recognize what your fleet capacity is and base your target on that. And so we need to distinguish that buffer that's being referred to in the text you cite is for the catch target, not the ABC.
Okay. Well, since you say the recent discard estimates have been approximately 7% of the landings in the north and 22% of the landings in the south, and there's a major source of uncertainty regarding that estimate, will the council have any information to look at regarding the degree of uncertainty we have relative to those particular estimates? For example, how are we to know that the discards that likely will be occurring in the north will be 25% of the landings and not 7%. How will we know they're not 50% of the landings in the south instead of 22%? So what will we have in our hands as a tool, as advice from the SSC regarding the extent to which we should really reduce the ABC down to a lower level to get an ACL that accounts for all of this uncertainty about discarding? That's where I'm at right now. I'm not sure how to deal with monkfish and this major source of uncertainty.
Yeah, another challenging question. If the management system were staying the same, I would say we can go back to the most recent assessment and what the discard estimates were and what their variability was. That this standardized bycatch reporting method not only gives you those discard rates of 7 and 22%, but it also gives you a confidence limit around those. Was it as high as 50 or not? We could go back to the data pool workshop to decide that. Unfortunately, you're also in the process of revising the management system for monkfish, which will likely affect those discard rates. And so it's a parallel development, and I think the best answer to it is in-season monitoring and having data from the year that you're managing to test to see if the 7% is staying at 7% or if it's going up to 50%. There's nothing better than new data, especially if it's in a new management system.
Dave Gatel.
I think I'm going to rephrase David Pierce's question just a little bit. If I understand what you just said correctly, and I'm not sure that I do, we will need to discern a change in the discard rate, and if we can't do that, then we have to set the ACT, the annual catch target, at some level below the ACL based on what we think the likelihood of that discard rate changing. My question is, how much does the discard rate have to change to make a serious difference here? In other words, does it have to change by, does it have to double? Does it have to triple? Does a change of 1% matter? And then some kind of a correlation between what that change might be and how far we have to set the ACT below the ACL. So if we think it might, if it's reasonable to assume that it could double with a big incoming year class as an example, we have to set that ACT 25% below the ACL. I think that's the question David's asking, and I'm not sure I see an answer in what's been presented here.
Yeah, it's a good point, is that the council is going to need new information to make these new decisions. But I think your approach to these what-if scenarios is valuable, is that maybe you need to take the current fishery and what its capacity is and assume different discard rates and which ones put you over the annual catch limit. And that approach will probably give you a reasonable catch target. The problem is you're going to be doing what is the most difficult task in fishery science, is projecting forward, because discards are based on recruitment. They're based on fishing practices, which don't always stay the same. And so that's why there's a great deal of management uncertainty. And the more the council can foresee those problems, the better it's going to be at avoiding exceeding the annual catch limit.
Jenny?
Just to assume you were going to have a similar management plan going forward, wouldn't you, even if you're not, wouldn't you look at what the cause of the previous discard rates were? In other words, what I'm trying to get out is regulatory discards. I have it hard to believe that people are throwing away $3 item in a big way unless there's some reason. And then, like you said, it's new recruitment may be a reason, but regulatory discards is also a reason that would have to be under consideration. And that as you were moving forward, if you were changing that so that the regulatory discards would go down, you'd take credit for, you would have to take that into consideration on the positive side.
Yeah, those data are available, as you know, is that The 7% and 22% can be broken down into regulatory discards, size limit discards, so that if you were removing trip limits, you could assume that a discard rate is going to go just based on minimum sizes, which would presumably be much lower than the 7 and 22%. But that's exactly what I meant by when you change a management system, you actually affect the discard rates. But there are data on that from the past of what the discard reason was.
Steve, I see a theme emerging here in the past two reports of a higher value or premium on data generated through catch monitoring.
That's been developing over the last 100 years.
Yeah. Paul Howard.
Steve, one of the theme going through a lot of your discussion is how much risk is the council willing to take? And one of the things that I wasn't aware of is that the AMs, I always thought the AMs would kick in the very following year so that the amount of risk you're willing to take would be couched on, well, we're going to get the correction in the very following fishing year. But I understand that's not going to happen, that the council is going to have to wait or may wait 2 years. Or so there'd be another year. If, in fact, the ACL is exceeded, the very following year nothing happens. So that could impact the science and the management for the third year down. So I just want to make sure that the chairman and the committees and the species committees and the PDTs know that as you're looking at the amount of risk you're willing to take, if the AM doesn't go in place for two more years, then you've got to consider where you set your ACL if that's going to happen in terms of risk.
What would be the reason an AM wouldn't kick in the next year? A payback.
For many of our fisheries, we don't know what the previous year catch was until the middle of the next year. And we're in that situation, particularly with observer coverage. We're just finding out what the 2008 discards were for many of our stocks now. It's why our advice for Gulf of Maine winter flounder goes through 2007, because at the time, we didn't have the 2008 catch. So it's one of the realities of the system that Paul's recognizing, is that there are going to be times when we know we exceeded an ACL. How much overage, it may take time, so that by the time the new fishing year starts, you may not have the information you need for an accountability measure.
Anything else on monkfish? Dr. Pierce.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I just want to get one thing clarified here. On page 2 of the report, Steve, you note that the overfishing level for the different areas are 23,000 metric tons for the north and 28,000 metric tons for the south. The ABCs you are recommending are quite a bit less from those OFLs. Specifically, the 23,000 metric ton for the north is reduced down to 17,485 metric tons, and in the south it's reduced from 28,000 metric tons to 13,326. Now my question is, the reduction in those numbers in both areas, is it due entirely or primarily to uncertainties described in that data pool workshop report, uncertainties related to, as shown here in the document, natural mortality rate, growth rate, magnitude of discards, uncertain survey indices, underreported historical catch, and a short assessment series? Is that how you got from the larger number to the smaller numbers? And if so, where are those calculations?
Okay. I guess procedurally what we did was accept the conclusions from the data pool workshop. And the data pool workshop concluded that the scale model could not be used to project forward, and so we could not use it as a basis for OFL. And so we needed a data pool proxy, And the derivation of those I presented in March is based on the average exploitation during the period of increase. It's simply a data poor proxy. It has nothing to do with FMSY, nothing to do with OFL, and so it does not comply exactly with National Standard 1 guidelines because we don't have the information we need to comply with National Standard 1 guidelines.
Okay, moving on to Harry. I think we're all set.
For herring, we had one term of reference to review the process for specifying acceptable biological catch and annual catch limits and accountability measures. Here it's by management area with consideration of the importance of herring as a forage species. Now, the timing was a bit unfortunate in that we were reviewing this at the end of April, beginning of May, and there was a stock assessment update scheduled for June, which has now taken place. But, of course, we didn't have the results of the track assessment at the SSC meeting. So this is more of a conceptual review on the general approach proposed by the PDT rather than a precise method for determining catch limits. But the PDT did present its general approach for annual catch limits by management area and consideration of herring as forage. The proposal by the PDT has several options, but all of them fortunately map our current catch management into the new phrasing and requirements of the reauthorized act. And so this is one example table of where entities in the current plan can be mapped directly into entities that we now need, that the allowable biological catch in the current plan would be the overfishing limit. There would be an acceptable biological catch that would be less than that. There would be an OY developed. And so all of the catch management acronyms that the herring stakeholders are used to could be mapped into the new system. The acceptable biological catch will be lower than the overfishing level to account for scientific uncertainty. And similar to the way we started with scallops, the PDT just started outlining what the sources of scientific uncertainty are. The mixing of spawning components of herring is that we are managing a stock complex with several discrete spawning groups. There's a retrospective pattern in the assessment. And as Jim reported yesterday, the track summary reports are available, at least in draft form, and this retrospective pattern continued and is still very strong. So this is going to be another major source of uncertainty for herring. And predator-prey relationships, forage issues, also contribute to scientific uncertainty because the assessment needs to estimate or assume a level of natural mortality with changing predator fields that can add considerable scientific uncertainty to the herring assessment. The SSC added some other sources of uncertainty it thought should be considered: imprecise trawl survey indices, incomplete coverage of the acoustic surveys, and again, uncertain implications of forage species such as natural mortality. So it's a bit more precise than just the predator-prey relationships. Again, we're recognizing observer data as a priority for addressing management uncertainty, that they have adequate coverage. We recognize that there are challenges for sampling a high-volume fishing process, and discarding events like slippage can be hard to observe and hard to estimate what the slippage was. So that's releasing herring that are caught in the net before they are brought on board. For herring management, there are some components of catch that are outside the jurisdiction of the council, that being state waters catch of herring and Canadian catches of herring. These are proposed to be accounted for in determining the ACL, such that the ACL is the acceptable biological catch with the Canadian catch and state catches removed, at least what the expected Canadian catches and state water catches are removed, so that the ACL is less than the ABC based on those amounts. Now, here's another case where one source of uncertainty is accounted for in the ACL, but because we don't know what Canadian and state water catches will be exactly, that adds some management uncertainty. And that even though we're accounting for those catches in the ACL determination, because there's uncertainty in them, they should also be included in the target. We could derive an ACL if it underestimates Canadian catch, then we may exceed the ACL because of that uncertainty, and therefore it should be considered in the targets. There were some options in the document in which accountability measures, in which the fishery was closed when the catch reached 100% of the ACL. We're recommending that it should be when the catch approaches the ACL, for example, 90% of the ACL, something less than 100%. As I said, the herring resource is a mix of spawning groups. The annual catches are currently allocated to management area using various assumptions of how stocks mix and how much stock there is in each area. We're fortunate to have a presentation, and I believe it's in your background document, a program that was developed explicitly for herring in the Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank that can help evaluate what annual catch limits by management area should be. And again, it's based on the relative biomass of different spawning groups and how much they mix. As far as herring as a forage species, we recognize that the management system wants to consider consumption of herring in the management. However, in order to do that, in order to allocate certain portion of the biomass to forage, consumption also needs to be in the stock assessment, because that inclusion of consumption in the herring stock assessment would likely change the scaling of the assessment so that you would now be able to allocate something to consumption. But until consumption is explicitly in the stock assessment, it's probably unrealistic to also allocate it because the scaling would probably be wrong. And also, furthermore, the third bullet is that the broader role of herring and other forage species such as river herring in the ecosystem should be considered. So not only what's eating herring, but what herring are eating and what predators of herring are eating as an alternative to herring. So these are our herring recommendations. Is that the general approach that the PDT presented conforms to the Act and the guidelines, that management uncertainty should be considered to avoid accountability measures for exceeding the annual catch limit, particularly the imprecision or bias associated with in-season monitoring of catch. Allocation of annual catch limits to management areas should incorporate information on the connectivity among spawning components and the proportion of biomass in each component. And the consumption of herring by other species should be accounted for in the stock assessment as well as the management system.
Steve, on your last point, I thought that was part of natural mortality. That's not considered part of natural mortality. So that's not part of the assessment right now?
Well, like all of our assessments, the herring assessment assumes a rate of natural mortality. That's based on the general life history of herring. Including consumption would be a bit more responsive, so that if there were an increase in herring predators, your stock assessment model would be responsive to that, and the consumption would go up, your total natural mortality would go up. Presently, we're assuming a constant rate of natural mortality across time, so our assessment is not responsive to changes in predator fields. And if we are to allocate a portion of the herring biomass to predator fields, we should know what the predators are removing in the recent past to know what we should allocate in the future.
Okay, thank you. Questions on this? Paul Howard?
Steve, we've got to do, I think, 3-year specs for herring for 2010, 11, and 12, and fishing year is January 1st. So when do you think we'll turn this conceptual stuff into hard numbers?
Yeah, I actually had this conversation with Jim a bit at the close of yesterday. We do have the stock status reports. The summary sheets from the herring track, but we don't have the more detailed stock assessment. And as we talked about earlier, the SSC needs a lot of information to evaluate what the sources of uncertainty are. And so we're going to need the full assessment report to do that job completely. I recognize that there's a time schedule issue, and so I would just ask that we try to get that track report, the full track report, as soon as possible. We are scheduled to talk about herring on August 25th to tie up some of these loose ends. I don't know that the track report will be available August 25th.
Well, that seems to be something we better make sure is available on August 25th or before. Dr. Pierce.
Yes, Steve, back to the point just raised by John. I could see the need to account for consumption of herring as forage in the assessment to adjust the natural mortality rate to, let's say, from 20% up to 30%, something like that. Who knows what the number would be. Very difficult thing to assess and account for. But still, let's assume that that was done, that the assessment was, the crank was turned with a much larger estimate of natural mortality to account for the importance of herring as forage and an understanding of an increased number of predators out there within the ecosystem. Fine enough. So we then get from the SSC a recommendation for an ABC that would account for that. All right. I don't understand, therefore, why the SSC would suggest that the council should take that number and adjust it downwards again to account for forage. We, the council, would have no more additional information than what you already would have had to account for that uncertainty. So the SSC recommendation is not convincing on this particular issue, unless you can change my mind on that. I mean, it seems like it's a real double counting in this particular instance.
Yeah, thank you, David. I think with respect to consumption, there is no clear recommendation to allocate it or include it in a buffer. We talked about natural mortality and its uncertainty. That should be included in scientific uncertainty. The term of reference came from the council to provide recommendations on how to consider forage, herring as a forage species. So that was a council request on how best to do that. And our recommendation is that if that is the desire of the council to explicitly consider consumption of herring in the catch management system, that it should be in the assessment. It would be inappropriate to read the SSC recommendation as that the SSC is recommending to the council that it allocate a certain amount of biomass for forage. That term of reference came from the council in our recommendation on how best to do that.
So in response to our request, the SSC is telling us we should double count.
No. The double counting, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that we want to account for uncertainty and natural mortality and the scientific uncertainty. And then if it were to be allocated, it would be something less than the ACL. So it would be similar to the Canadian catch, is that if there's going to be a removal that the council doesn't manage, doesn't have jurisdiction over, that it could be treated that way. And so that removal has uncertainty in it, and that's going to affect the assessment. And if you want to recognize that removal and explicitly allocate it, it would have to be allocated there as well.
Okay, then as it stands right now, I think my course of action, personal course of action, would be that with the recent assessment that we will soon see, if natural mortality has been changed to account for the importance of herring as forage, I'm not going to be willing to take more off the top to account for herring as forage. It will already have been accounted for in the assessment. However, if we get that assessment and that has not been accounted for, then I would be more inclined to somehow come up with an additional deduction that would provide for that needed forage. At least that's the way I'm inclined to go at this particular point.
Yeah, I think in that, David, you're right, is that our OFL, which is where we start, is our fishing mortality applied to the current biomass. It is not the forage. And so this overall catch is what's allowable for fishing. Now, if you want to allocate some of the catch allowable to be fished as more forage, the council can do that. But right now, the OFL is in fishery removal, and it's the allowable fishery removal. We heard from several stakeholders as well at the SSC meeting that they would like to do that, is that they would like to take some of the catch available to fishing and allocate it to forage. Again, that impetus is not from the SSC, it's from the council.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. And you indirectly answered my question through David. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
I think Steve probably knows what I'm going to say, but I'll say it anyway. The concern that I have about deducting for forage with a stock assessment that doesn't include a higher natural mortality is that when you consider increased forage or consumption of herring in the assessment, it increases your biomass estimate. So if you don't include it in the assessment in the beginning and you're only deducting it, I mean, it's a two-way street. You incorporate it, it increases your biomass estimates, and then you would want to have some kind of deduction that takes place to account for it. But to not account for it and simply subtract is not the appropriate way to go. And I don't think from a management perspective that the council should be doing that. Whether or not the SSC, when you have, you know, a group of that includes some stock assessment scientists who understand that perfectly well, have a discussion about forage would be different, but I don't think that the council should be making deductions for forage unless it's incorporated. Well, it should be incorporated into the assessment. It affects your biomass estimate.
Sally?
So let me make sure I'm understanding this. So the stock assessment currently accounts for predator demands but does not account for changes in predator demands. Therefore, if we want to account for changes in predator demands, that needs to be taken into account additionally to what's accounted for in a static way in the stock assessment. Is that correct? Okay.
Doug Grout.
I had a different perception, and maybe what you just said makes my perception wrong, but I always understood that it was my impression that we have a fixed estimate of natural mortality because at least at this point we don't have the capability of having interannual changes to take into consideration increases in or decreases in predation. So I always thought that the source of uncertainty that we were taking into consideration into the stock assessment, and thus the difference between the OFL and the ABC, was because we have a fixed natural mortality rate. Now, the management aspect of it is that if we want to, as a management body, account for something, actually allocate some portion of that natural mortality to a more to forage. We're going to say that. So I'm looking at two different aspects. The scientific uncertainty is the fact that we have a fixed M, and so we need to have a greater difference between OFL and APC. But the whole concept of management uncertainty, or that where it comes into allocating it to an ACL or something, or adjusting that target, is because we're saying, well, we want to actually make an allocation to forage. Am I mixed up on that last part, or?
Dave Gabe.
Yeah, my biggest concern with the herring assessment has always been the uncertainty in the mixing rates in Area 2. And the reason I've been willing to let it go is the Area 2 fisheries never approached its tack until this year. This year it closed because it caught its tack. So now the mixing rates, what is the true mixing rate, starts to become very important. And so are we going to receive a future direction from the SSC on how to deal with that uncertainty? In other words, how big is the scientific uncertainty surrounding the mixing uncertainty? And will we get advice on how to set annual catch targets that I assume will be lower than the annual catch limits to account for that uncertainty? And will they be set only in Area 2, or will they be set in Area 1 and Area 2, because Area 1 also fully exploits its TAC?
Yeah, that's a very good point, is that each of the areas under the plan would have a separate ACL. And the management uncertainty would be different in each area. And Area 2, which is a winter mixing area of presumably all of our spawning groups, would have a stock composition uncertainty that the other areas actually don't have. Area 1A would be all inshore Gulf of Maine spawners, where Area 2 will have Gulf of Maine spawners, Georges Bank spawners, and so forth. So there's going to be a stock composition uncertainty there, and the problem is that different fisheries in Area 2 may actually have different stock compositions. That it appears that Georges Bank spawners may be in a different area of Area 2 than Gulf of Maine spawners. So it really begs for some monitoring of stock composition. And there are initiatives underway by the center, by GMRI, and others to enhance the stock composition science. We've tried genetics, morphometrics, several different things to identify different spawning groups and to sample those in the mixed fishery to determine what the stock composition is. So it gets back to the same theme that the chair recognizes, the need for data. But I think this is a natural feedback. As we're asking more of the management system, there should be feedback on what new science or different science the council needs. And so I'd encourage those of you on research steering and who have other opportunities to make research recommendations that this is one, that there are going to be new research recommendations from this new catch management scenario, and this is one.
Okay, that I still have the second part of the question. Are we going to get more advice from the SSC on ACTs relative to this issue of mixing uncertainty?
When we get down to our ABC recommendations, we will be using the tool that I presented here to try to give you the best information we have. And so we'll put the best information we have on relative biomass and mixing, working with the PDT, to provide some guidance on what the area ACL should be and the buffers below them.
Okay, Jim Odlin, and then we're going to have to move on.
My question is, how could the council ever have the capability to establish a forage number to take
I mean, unless somebody in science can tell us a baseline of the predators to start with and when it was and then how that increases to come up with some kind of correlation, anything we pick is really basically out of thin air as far as trying to have a buffer for forage.
That's exactly the basis of our recommendation, that if it's not in the assessment, it will be difficult to advise on what it should be.
Okay, well, thank you, Steve.
I just do have some wrap-ups.
Is that one slide?
Go for
on,
it.
On what's coming up for the summer, we'll be meeting in mid-August on scallops and groundfish. Now that we've presented the ABC methods, we'll be coming up with ABC values. Later in August, we'll meet in Newport on herring to come up with ABC values, and red crab we'll see for the first time for an ABC method. We then have an ecosystem-based fishery management workshop, and at your next meeting in Plymouth in September, there'll be another SSC report on all of these, and that will be given by John Honig in my absence. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Steve, and have a nice summer. Actually, you're going to stick around for tomorrow, right?
I'll be here always.
Okay. Thank you. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll get into herring. Okay, we're moving on to the Herring Committee report, tab 5, 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 report, tab 5.